time for a wrap-up and welcome. My name's Lenny Bloom. I'm a former pilot who flew many missions for the military-industrial complex. And, you know, I was a paymaster to spies, and so by airdrop or not, we delivered monies in the field. You know, everybody knows that, we're running a full paper bag operation, leaving bags of money at pre-assigned locations. For example, rural phone booths or just lockers at airports. And we've been using those contacts that we made back then, and a few of our major spies, namely Jeff Steinberg, Sherman Skolnick, Alex Jones, Lynn Horwitz, and even ABC News today have reported that this last 2 weeks, the Al-Qaeda is still being trained in Alabama, USA. Is that right, Bob?
That's scandalous. That is absolutely scandalous.
We should bring Bob in.
I'm tired of it. I'm making sure it's being done within American borders for future plans, future setups. I'm excited tonight. It's the 14th anniversary of the Harmonic Bob Versions, and I think we're going back into AIDS again tonight.
Yes, that's right. Tonight's going to be an interesting discussion. We're looking forward to talking with Professor Don Scott, who's done a lot of work with Len Horowitz and has a lot of documentation and public record documents about the designer diseases.
Well, Lenny, I just want to make sure that during that interview I get to tell everybody how AIDS was done. I was part of the manufacture, and I think it'll help Don in his class action suit. But we'll do that later. Who's coming up now?
After that, we've got Will Thomas on chemtrails. And as you know from the promo that we did, the chemtrails is all about the poison that's being spread using the aircraft at high level, vapor trails and chemtrails. And
I'm not one usually to ask questions, but Bob Dobbs, I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
I was down on a boat on a lake. I can't tell you which lake, but I was on a boat on a lake, and there was a plane riding in the sky, writing advertisements in the sky. And I thought, maybe, I know those aren't normally chemtrails, but what if they were? What if even the advertising in the sky is bad for us? Bob, do you agree with that? Is that
possible? No, I don't think the advertising in the sky is bad for us, but the chemtrails are.
All right. I didn't know. I just saw them being written in the sky. I saw that smoke, and I got scared.
Now, Bob, we also have an urgent call from Sherman Skolnick, who has some really terrific news to discuss about what's happening around the White House and around George Bush and what's really being played out behind the scenes.
Okay, let's take it.
And Bob, I have an update for you. If you'll recall, there was a man at Best Coffee here in Toronto who was accused of helping the Al-Qaeda. Do you remember this? He was a person who helped you with posters back in the day, back in the Elma Combo when you were doing live stuff.
Yes, I've heard a lot of stuff about this guy through Andrew Crystal when he reports here in New York, compliments of Mojo Radio.
Well, that's terrific, but I have to tell you, the truth of the matter today, right now in this Toronto Star, is that in the Buffalo courts, they have exonerated him and his relatives. He had nothing to do with anything. It was a big smear tactic. It was a bunch of, you know, witch calling or something, and now he demands an apology because he was innocent all along.
Well, he deserves it.
That's great.
Bob, this week there's a lot going on centering around 9/11 and the lead up to it, and it's certainly something that we could just throw out and discuss, because this World Trade Center number 7 building fell down and it wasn't even hit by an airplane, and the media seems to have forgotten about that one, don't you think?
Yeah, it had the records of the FBI, CIA, Secret Service, every known crime in the last 30 years in there.
Yeah, well, the media is now completely preoccupied for months with Gary Conduit and Chandra Levy, you know, as if that's America's most important news story. And meanwhile, there's a lot of people in the United States, Robert Letterman, we're going to put him up on the website, in an article about Chandra Levy saves George W. Bush. He says, why is no one in the mainstream asking hard questions about the Bush family's many business ties to the Bin Laden family, including financing GW's oil company, employing former President Bush as a spokesperson, and working with Neil Bush on various business deals, unquote.
Well, there's nothing erroneous in Robert Letterman's work. I know him here in New York. Connie's worked with him in the spray problem. But the point is, in the second hour, I'll explain how the reason no one's going to be told any major media deals with the Android meme. So I look forward to explaining why we can't make too much about this.
Terrific.
We now have on the phone Donald Scott, president of the Common Cause Foundation of Canada.
Don, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Terrific. Just to give Don an introduction, Don is an expert in the field of viruses. We have to keep it real simple because we don't want to get complicated. We just want to keep it real simple. We're short on time. But, Don, you're an expert on designer viruses. And we've talked a lot on this show in the past with Len Horowitz about how the Anglo-American establishment, as he says, the British Crown, created designer viruses. And we wanted you to come on and just give a brief in-depth look at what we're talking about here.
Well, yeah, what has happened over the past 60 years, actually, going back to 1942, the United States government, in cooperation with the Canadian and the British and the Australian, pooled their talents to create new variations of very ancient disease forms so that they could fire that at enemies instead of firing bullets. Right. And one of the things that they developed was a fragment of a bacteria. Now, a lot of people know what a bacteria is, a little one-celled animal, and they know that a number of little one-celled animals do a lot of harm to people if they have a particular disease agent. Well, what the researchers learned to do was to take a certain particle of the bacterial DNA
right.
in crystalline form. So this was just like having a salt shaker full of salt, only instead of that you had a salt shaker full of disease that could sicken or kill hundreds of thousands or even millions of people.
Oh, wow.
And the name of this particular fragment of DNA is called a mycoplasma. And a mycoplasma causes, among other things, AIDS, Alzheimer's, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, lupus, Wegener's disease, multiple sclerosis, if I didn't already say it, Crohn's colitis, diabetes type 2, Parkinson's.
Ooh, the boys in the lab have been busy.
Well, they have indeed. Well, actually not too busy. They just created this fragment, or they just managed to isolate, as they said in their documents, the disease agent, the part of the bacteria that does the damage. And as I say, we call that a mycoplasma, and we know now, without a shadow of a doubt, that this particular fragment causes the diseases I have specified. And on Monday night here in Sudbury, I'll be presenting this at the Sudbury Public Library, but on Wednesday night in Toronto at the Queensway Lions Club Hall, I will be presenting the evidence for those folks who have family members or who are themselves ill with, say, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. That's Lou Gehrig's disease.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if anybody listening wants to check out more about it, they can go to mojoradio.com and go to the Cloak and Dagger site and look for this morning's this program, and Don's link is there. Don, you were governor of the Ontario Teachers Federation in the 70s.
You've
got a lot of degrees here, a BA from U of T, an MA from Laurentian, and a Master of Science from Guelph University, so you really know what you're talking about.
Well, I try to. I'm very interested in what's going on in the world. And I became interested in these degenerative diseases in 1995 when a lady came to me and said she needed help because she had what she called as chronic fatigue syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time I didn't know what it was, but I said I would help her. And in the meantime I started studying the disease chronic fatigue, and lo and behold, we find that chronic fatigue is also one of the diseases caused by the mycoplasma, and it was developed in the United States as a weapon, and believe it or not, the United States government has a patent on the disease agent called the mycoplasma fermentans. And in that patent,
yeah,
they state that it causes Alzheimer's and AIDS and chronic fatigue and Wegener's. So this isn't just a theory.
Right.
This is a fact. We've got a copy of the patent, and we've got a whole lot more information. For example, we have learned that HIV does not cause AIDS. and we learned that from a U.S. government document.
Oh, that's something.
All right, I'd like to quickly recap. We are Cloak and Dagger Mojo Radio. We would like your calls if you have any questions for Donald Scott, Bob Dobbs, or Lenny Bloom regarding designer viruses. Please continue.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, we have a document which was written in 1972 by the National Institutes for Health, and they were working at that time with the CIA developing the various diseases that they've been working on for a number of years, one of which was the development of the pathogen that causes AIDS. Now, a lot of people think that HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, causes AIDS. Well, in this document which we have, which is called Special Virus Cancer Program, Progress Report Number 9, on page 39 of that document, which was written in 1972, it tells us that HIV does not cause AIDS, and this was even before there was any AIDS in the world, because you see, they were working on it, and they knew what they were working on,
right.
And in fact, one of the articles we have from the people who wrote this report is titled, Viral Diseases in Man Associated with Acquired Immune Deficiency States, and that was 10 years before there was any AIDS, and yet they were talking about AIDS.
Agent 11, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I haven't had you yet, but boy, you look good. And if you want to see what Agent 11 looks like, you've got to go on the www.mojoradio.com.
Okay, I do have a serious question here.
All right.
This is from John from Aurelia, and he says he's read about you on the Cloak and Dagger site. You are a professor at a molecular institute in the U.S. He wants to know, are they involved in this?
Oh, so that will be for Donald Scott.
Yes.
I didn't quite hear it.
All right. Ask the question one more time, Agent 11.
A man from Aurelia asked, he says he's read about you on the Cloak and Dagger site, that you are a professor at the Molecular Institute in the U.S., and he wants to know, are they involved in this?
No, the institute itself is not involved, except individually. There are a number of people on the faculty, and the director is Dr. Garth Nicholson, and he's been doing a tremendous amount of research on the mycoplasma, but his research is quite independent of mine, although coincidentally we have both been working on amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, which is one disease that is caused by the mycoplasma by our research, and Dr. Garth Nicholson has been doing work in the same area, but is separate and distinct.
All right, let's go over to a question from Bob Dobbs. Bob, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do, Deep Throat. Don.
Yeah.
Is the mycoplasma from the brucellosis animal bacteria?
Yeah, the brucellosis, there are a number of species, but they are bacteria, little one-celled animals, and the mycoplasma fermentans, which causes Alzheimer's, AIDS, chronic fatigue syndrome, and the other ones I named, that mycoplasma fermentans is from the nucleic acid of Brucella abortus, and their genomic sequence is the same. So they're the same creature, except that the brucellosis is a little one-celled animal which has been killed, but part of its nucleic acid says, I'm going to keep on living. And when it says that, it gets into cells of a human being, and when it gets into that cell, it'll stay there for sometimes 5, 10, 15 years, doing no harm. But if it's given some kind of trauma, it then is roused into activity, it begins to consume its host cell from the inside out, producing Parkinson's, producing diabetes type 1, producing amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, because of different effects of it.
That's amazing.
So, Don, you're saying that that the cause of AIDS is not a genetically engineered virus and that this mycoplasma is spread all over our environment.
Okay, there's two things cause AIDS. One is a genetically developed virus called HIV, which was developed from starting with the Vizsla virus in sheep. That was their starting point. And they were able to passage it through cats and cows and other things, to create a variant of VSNIC called HTLV3, and then they were able to create a variant of that which they call HIV. Now, HIV does not cause AIDS. It is a cofactor which is only able to work because the mycoplasma causes AIDS. And how does it cause AIDS? It causes AIDS by uptaking preformed sterols from its host and destroying or at least altering significantly the endocrine balance of the victim. And that's right in a U.S. government document that we have, I told you about, Progress Report Number 9, published in 1972. Richard Helms of the CIA said in 1974, hey, gather all those up and shred them. And everybody thought they were gone forever. But last year, one of our members in Texas found this 400-page document in a library in Texas and sent me a copy, and we have it in the hands of others of our researchers. And in that government document, it makes it clear, HIV does not cause AIDS. AIDS is caused by mycoplasma fermentans.
They pulled the wool over our eyes again. It's funny that people think it's okay to kill a lot of people if you tell them you're going to do it before you kill them.
But it's not okay.
And Bob's here. And Bob, what did you think of Don's stuff? It got a little bit heavy there, but poetry certainly communicates long before it's understood.
Well, my question really opened it wide, and Connie here is very intrigued by what he and Garth Nicholson are doing. She's going to get in touch with him, but I will explain the second hour how the HIV virus was developed in relation to the mycoplasma.
Okay, well, you want to maybe do it before, because at some point Skolnick's going to come in.
That's
and we'll
right.
be in a different zone.
Oh, okay.
Don't let it go too long.
I'll do it now. I thought Skolnick was there.
No, he's not coming on to the second hour.
Oh, okay. Here's what happened is in the early 70s, a scientist in the military, and we won't call it the American military because
right.
it was part of the world government and the solar government, which is everywhere and is not contained
yep.
within one national situation.
Mm-hmm.
This guy came up with the idea of what's called a viral debilitant. In other words, he knew that nuclear war was obsolete, yet if we still want to take over countries, how can we take over the country and keep the industries and factories intact, yet subdue the people? So the idea was to create a virus that would genetically engineer would be designed to infect people so that their immune system weakens.
Now that again.
Then they pick up the local diseases, and the genetic virus is programmed so that the virus then becomes benign over, say, 3 weeks, whatever.
Mm.
And then the people, their immune system is repaired, and they get healthy, and then in that three-week period you've taken over the country, then you can employ the people under your control. That was the basic design and motive as a military agent called the viral debilitant that the AIDS virus was set up under. The problem was that when it was implemented in Chad, Nigeria, it mutated, just to make this brief, it mutated a lot more rigorously and violently than they thought, and its lifespan was 29 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was in 1980. They unleashed that under the cover of the WHO smallpox program. And so you're here today, 22 years later,
yeah.
and over the next few years, and we've already seen evidence, the virus, besides mutating, is getting weaker, and people are doing better under the virus because it's moved into the benign phase.
Yeah, well, the boys in the lab who do this high-tech chemo-organic technology, they're not foolproof either, are they, Bob?
Well, that's not, if we listen to a previous guest, I can't remember who it was, I think it was Alex Jones, suggested they have treatments and cures. I mean, we right here in Manhattan have a treatment for AIDS. We've always had it, and we can use it. So if we could get it out to the masses, they could be cured. But the elites have antidotes.
Yeah, what did Jones mean by that life-extending technology? You were talking, that's what you're referring to right now.
Well, I'm talking about a particular thing that, you see, the reason that vaccination against AIDS doesn't work is that the virus mutates. So you cannot get it within the cell. You can't do a magic bullet on it. You have to get something that affects the cell wall, the membrane around the interior of the cell where the virus is mutating and hiding and moving. If you affect the environment around the membrane and convince the virus to leave because you're creating a hostile medium for it, then it'll leave. And that's the way you treat AIDS. But you won't hear that on Peter Mansbridge.
No, no, you won't. Or Robertson or any of these.
Only.
You have to support the
only on
environment.
Only on Cloak and Dagger, Mojo AM640, do you actually get this.
Yeah, we just announced
here.
The kill. I just announced the how you successfully defeated.
That's right. Now, we have William Thomas on the line right now, Lenny.
Yeah, okay. Bob, we're going to Will Thomas, and of course the background for everybody on Will is the expert on the chemtrails, which is a proof that they're spraying poison from above using aircraft, and many books and articles written about it. So welcome to the show, Will.
Thank you.
Will, give us a quick synopsis about what you've discovered out there. What's going on up in the sky?
Well, in more than 3 years investigations into the chemtrails, I have... Well, I would say conclusive evidence at this point that a massive U.S. Air Force-led operation has been underway intensely for the past 3 years to spray, in most but not all cases, in most cases, sunlight-reflecting chemicals into the stratosphere in order to reflect a small percentage. They're shooting for 1% of incoming sunlight in order to chill out global warming, which, as everyone listening knows from the newspaper headlines and radio shows like yours, is triggering extreme weather events literally as we speak in Europe, and it's bankrupting the major insurance companies of this planet, which are, by the way, bigger than big oil and bigger than the international trade in arms. So
and is the oil industry riding in behind this to some degree?
Well, I assume it. I have no evidence of that. I do have very interesting evidence just turned up today that Exxon, Mobil, other oil companies have been funding geoengineering experiments involving carbon dioxide sinks, that is trying to bury this stuff in the deep oceans with no guarantee that it will resurface. Spreading algae blooms on the sea by seeding it with iron. There's been experiments to do that. Worked great, took CO2 out of the air. The plankton died, fell to the bottom of the ocean. Wonderful, except, oops, they forgot something. They didn't, another one of these laws of unintended consequences.
Yeah.
And then the plankton sucked all the oxygen out of the ocean and killed all the sea life in the area. So
yeah.
That didn't work too well. But the oil companies are funding those programs publicly. So I, you can...
No wonder the whales are all beaching themselves.
Well, they're also full of PCBs, which haven't been manufactured since the 70s, the latest beachings. Those whales were, I mean, they're toxic waste. They're, in Canada, they're considered hazardous waste.
So can we see these planes from where we're here in Ontario?
Oh, yeah. I get lots of emails and phone calls as recently as a few days ago from various regions around Toronto complaining about the all-silver or all-white aircraft. The Air Force in the U.S. is moving from a silver paint scheme to white, so we're seeing both high-flying planes. And, of course, for people wondering what the heck we're talking about, we're not talking about contrails, which are condensation trails formed by ice crystals that come out behind an engine exhaust at high altitude. The dirt particles and the moisture in the engine exhaust momentarily condense, just like your breath does on a cold day in Ontario, and just about as quickly dissipates. I was looking at European studies just an hour ago, and they have looked at the new engine technology, and people have been writing me saying, well, it must be the new engines on these jets are creating more contrails. And in fact, the Europeans studied the new engines and said, well, the two-engine commercial airliners, the contrails last 4 seconds on average.
Right.
And the four-engine planes last much longer, up to about, 22 seconds.
Well, just to complete your thought, the bottom line you're saying is the chemtrails are not vapor trails. They last longer. They're larger in size, I assume?
They are. They spread out until they cover the sky in a characteristic milky, murky haze. Chemtrails last for hours and are often laid down by two or more jets flying characteristic X patterns, grid patterns, parallel rows, flying in formations that commercial airlines are forbidden to fly in such proximity. We have a Houston study done by Mark Stedham in the year 2000 in December, and he studied jet trails in the sky over Houston and identified the aircraft using a Flight Explorer computer program.
Mm-hmm.
And when he ID'd the planes, he found that on average, in the same time span, in the same airspace, commercial planes were leaving contrails 10 seconds to 22 seconds on average. The military flying alongside them 4 to 8 hours.
Right. Yeah, they're spraying some stuff that's heavy. And what's it doing to us? Pretty well, just... What's it doing to us?
What's the chemical? The main chemical constituents of the climate modification chemtrails are aluminum oxide and quartz, very fine quartz crystals. We're talking in the aluminum 10 microns. One of your hairs on your head is 100 microns in diameter, so these are ultra-tiny particles. Aluminum oxide, I should hasten to reassure your listeners, at least slightly reassure them, researchers tell me and medical doctors that it's inert. It's about as common as inert as sand. It shouldn't hurt plants. It should sink in the water, and it shouldn't, quote, shouldn't be toxic to people. There are two problems with this scenario. The aluminum oxide is in such fine particulates that the EPA has said last year, to great fanfare in England and in papers in the United States as well as here in Canada, that very small particulates are a, quote, extreme health hazard and can lead to lung problems, heart problems, and many premature deaths. And their upper limit for these particulates is 10 microns. So if people are susceptible, if they have a weak immune system or are prone to allergies, they could be affected. I should emphasize that this stuff comes down in a random distribution so that someone literally 30 feet away could have very little exposure alongside someone who has quite great exposure to these particulates. The other problem with the so-called safe aluminum oxide is that I have hypothesized that these particulates let out at high altitudes are bringing down from the upper atmosphere viruses, bacteria, and fungi that live and breed undisturbed in the upper atmosphere, and as you can imagine, if they precipitate out in rainfall, mostly fall in the water because the planet's about three-quarters water. But it seems to stand to reason, if you spray a matrix like aluminum oxide or particulates up there and they fall down, they're going to drag these pathogens out of the sky. And that's why I feel so many people complaining of chemtrail-related illness are giving symptoms not only of an allergic or an asthmatic reaction to particulates, but a reaction to fungal infection. And you know that if you have a flu-like illness that is more severe than any flu you ever had, but does not come with a fever, and if your blood temperature actually drops, you have a fungal infection.
So does the military, U.S. military, tell its pilots and its all the its staff that this is going on, and the physical effects that it can have? Has somebody been advised by memo of it?
I don't know that to be the case. I do know that the military flying the missions are being advised that these are extremely important, probably we could surmise national security issues, but they're being told these are climate modification experiments. And I know this because air traffic controllers across the United States at every major airport are being told the same things. When they're being ordered to divert commercial airliners, as they are, below these large formations of U.S. Air Force tankers because their radar scopes are being obscured by this aluminum oxide, it forms a haze on their radar, and they're saying, what's going on? And they're told it's climate modification. I've been working with reporter S.T. Brent, a freelance radio reporter affiliated with ABC out on the east coast of the USA, and she has interviewed a source we have come to call Deep Sky on three occasions, and he has confirmed in detail that, yes, they're Air Force tankers, yes, it's climate mod, yes, they are continuing up into Canada. And just recently, Deep Sky talked with another controller in another part of the USA on tape. And this controller was so concerned at possible human health effects that this person went to the local hospitals to see if there were any spikes in emergency room emissions on the days that this operator was watching emissions from tankers, and found a direct correlation.
All right. We have a call from George in Orangeville about chemtrails. Thank you for calling, George.
Oh, hi. Well, I'm glad some people have seen him other than me. I carry a camera and I photograph them. Mm-hmm. And he's right, they do linger. And most of my photographs, I wait until I get three passes all in one frame. So you have the first pass and it'll have spread out. It'll be, you know, maybe a kilometer, 2 kilometers wide. The second pass will be up and might be several hundred meters wide. And then get the plane as it's coming by for the third swipe. We're spraying all over South Central Ontario. They were spraying today. We've got some great shots from downtown Toronto with the CN Tower and the bank towers as a backdrop.
Oh, boy.
It does make people sick. I don't know why no one looks up in the sky. Like, you don't see clouds forming X's.
That's right.
There's nothing to see up there anymore.
Now, listen, we also have an email that I think we should read right now, because now George called from Orangeville. We have an email from Burlington. Agent 11, please read it.
Anna asks, is there a chance that commercial airlines could be used to release chemtrails?
And please read the P.S.
The P.S. says, I've seen two planes making a grid pattern in southern Ontario. Is it happening here?
Well, of course, we just heard from another caller. Yes, it is happening in southern Ontario, as it's happening here on the West Coast today. They're stealing our skies. They're back after a couple of months of light activity. Yes, airliners could be used theoretically. The patent, the Hughes patent issued in 94, which lays out the blueprint, the practical blueprint for chemtrails. They call it a sunscreen, and they say it's to mitigate global warming. And the patent says, we could put this stuff, this aluminum oxide, right in the fuel of jet airliners, and they could dispense it at cruising altitudes, because airliners switch to main tanks for takeoff and landing, but they switch to cruise tanks at altitude. So you could segregate the material, theoretically, and pilots would be none the wiser. I have some disturbing video clips in my video, Chemtrails, Mystery Lines in the Sky, that show a positively identified MD-80 airliner with very fat, white, characteristic chemtrail plumes. So that's about all I can say, is we have photographs of what appear to be airliners. I have no direct evidence they're being used. I should note the patent went on to say that this could run into quite a bit of international opposition if this was done without the consent of the countries involved. And it further said that people are bound to get really mad at having milky white skies.
William.
You're right about that.
William.
Bob Dobbs.
Does this experiment affect the weather in any beneficial way? Can they justify what they're doing?
We certainly don't see that it's, quote, working. We've had in the last, in the early months of this year, the warmest 3 months on record in North America. So it certainly, if it's meant to cool temperatures, it doesn't seem to be working. I can say this emphatically, that the atmospheric research experts in Boulder, Colorado, and other places in the U.S., say that, yes, you can spray something like silver iodide, a couple of pounds, literally, into moist weather systems and cause rain, but they warn that if you spray a great deal of material, we're talking 320,000 pounds in a KC-10, about half that in a KC-135 tanker, if you spread that much in the atmosphere, they say, of particulates, they're talking about dust, but it's the same effect. It acts as a sponge and dries up the air. And I suppose that people have noticed we're in a drought situation in Canada. The U.S. has been complaining now for some 5 years.
Yeah.
And this, I'm not saying on air that chemtrails cause drought. I am saying emphatically that they dry up the air and will make any drought condition much worse. So in that sense, yes, and in the broader sense, because cloud cover disturbs regional heat balances by reflecting sunlight during the day, trapping heat at night, it can disturb the temperature, and of course weather is driven by temperature, and we see these trails being laid down ahead, often ahead of storm fronts.
And Will, if they heat up one area, the earth will react by cooling down another with maybe a violent storm or hurricane, and vice versa. If they cool down one area, it could, the earth responds to create a balance with something that could cause, and no wonder they're coming out and talking about killer hurricanes this season.
I know, I'm very concerned about the Dynogel people who want to drop their Dynogel product into a hurricane. In fact, they've got a plane on the runway, as I understand it, on the eastern edge of the U.S. waiting for a hurricane to develop so they can drop this stuff. The idea is to dry up some of the moisture that drives these superstorms and take it down, take a hurricane down quite a few notches away from catastrophic winds. It sounds great, like who would oppose this? But as you rightly point out, and as I question them, gee, if you take, you know, hurricanes are giant heat engines, and they redistribute very hot surface ocean temperatures.
It'll backfire.
That heat has to go somewhere.
That's right.
And it'll show up somewhere else. It's a closed. People have got to grasp, at least in government. I think most people are way ahead of governments, but scientists and governments have to grasp. We're on a spaceship here, folks.
Yeah.
The closed recirculating system.
All passengers and all crew and no passengers.
That's right.
Right, Bob?
Well, William, you make a good point about the insurance companies being more powerful than the oil companies. Can you point out to our listeners who are inside us where they can get more information on that paradigm?
Well, frankly, I would plug my book because I go into it with
and we've got your website at mojoradio.com, but plug your book.
Yeah, the Chemtrails Confirmed is the new version of my book, originally titled Probing the Chemtrails Conundrum, and I go into this insurance connection in some detail, and this book has some 43 denial-breaking photographs, as I call them. It's revised, it's got the controllers in it, and people can order the book toll-free by calling this East Coast phone number 1-877-726-4599 during East Coast business hours. That's 877-726-4599. That's really the best single source, because I've gone to the work of all the various sources and bringing the insurance information together.
Hello, Video Dave.
Greetings, gentlemen. How are you?
Well, we're scared. How are you?
I'm kind of scared, too. I'm in the bush. I don't know why I'm here. Somebody dropped me here. I woke up, but I have my segment. I have my report, and I'm prepared.
Yeah. All right.
You're on assignment there.
Now, what film would you like
this
to talk about?
This is a great film.
Well, I thought we should. It would be ample to talk about a film that maybe will be considered paramount in terms of all the films that we've discussed. This might be the single most significant film that we talk about, and it's The Wizard of Oz.
A classic, the only film out of Hollywood to ever become part of the religious myth. We celebrated it like Christmas.
Absolutely. Now, why don't we go to the clip, Lenny?
All right, let's do this. We're going to run the clip from The Wizard of Oz right now.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. The Great Aunt has spoken.
Who are you?
I am the great and powerful Wizard of Oz.
You are? I don't believe you.
No, I'm afraid it's true. There's no other wizard except me.
You humbug!
Yes, exactly so. I'm a humbug.
Oh, you're a very bad man.
Oh, no, my dear. I'm a very good man. I'm just a very bad wizard.
Oh, that was it. What a clip. Thank you, Video Dave.
Lenny and Dob, let me ask you, what's the significance of this clip? How do we read between its lines? What makes it so important?
Tremendous, because everybody's an amateur spy today or a professional spy and are looking behind the curtain. And certainly the cloak and dagger show is about how the cloaks are the media behind which the government makes itself invisible, the invisible government, as in 1984 Orwell. And the daggers are the high-tech weapons which are never reported, things like what Dr. Scott was talking to us about today. And The Wizard of Oz is about how the global theater around us is so powerful that you think you're living in Oz, but really there's a wizard behind the scenes pulling the curtains.
Now, wait a minute. Let me just stop you there. Is it safe to suggest that there is no man lingering behind the curtain?
Exactly.
The man was replaced by the machine.
No,
the curtain is the media.
Yeah. The important point is there is no backstage, and this is why people worship the Wizard of Oz as religious archetypal intents, because it's obsolete. There is no backstage. The manipulators are right in front of you on the media. And the bigger delusion is that there is no curtain, but they're presenting a curtain called the media.
Right.
The curtain is the media, just like I suggested.
Yes, but it's not hiding anything. It's just making you be intimidated.
But more than that, what's interesting is he didn't... they're inferring he said, you know, I'm not a bad man, I'm just a bad wizard. In other words, he still hasn't repented for getting caught.
No, that's why he's a bad wizard. He's irrelevant.
And you know, a lot of people that are very evil in the world, when they look in the mirror in the morning, they don't go, who do I get today? Nya-ha-ha. They all think they're good. Everybody thinks they're doing something good, even bad ones.
Okay, gentlemen, well, what other messages lie behind the surface of this film?
How about the Surrender Dorothy?
Oh,
were those chemtrails? Probably not.
Oh, the powerful way in which advertising zombified the society and numbed everybody out is typified by the witch riding in the sky with her broom, writing Surrender Dorothy. It's the ad industry represented there, the light that shines bright in the sky during the day and night.
Well, if you consider the straightforward content and ignore the wizard behind the curtain situation, then you're on the right track. But the main point is that people are afraid to be in the central position of the media and to be a Walter Cronkite, a Dan Rather, and they don't know that they are with the new media. So the old media is not telling you that you are the wizard in front and invisible and transparent to everybody.
Well, isn't this amazing that the wizard actually wanted the broom, because then the wizard would have power to write his own messages in the sky?
Good point. And what about Oz itself? Is that a metaphor for multinational corporations?
No.
Why not?
Because the multinational corporations don't run anything anymore. You have to understand, why doesn't President George Bush talk to the people intelligently? He's not interested in communication.
Bob, it's a physical entity. It's represented as a pinnacle. Oz is the pinnacle of element of the film itself. It has to represent something.
Yeah, it represents nothing. You don't realize, Dave, you're nothing, that you can't be anything in terms of language communication, because you're hijacked by a situation where there's general use of the ESP, and President Bush does not need to communicate. He does not recognize us.
Well, okay. as a dictator, he doesn't have to, does he?
That's right, he doesn't have to, but where is that? The point is, he's not in the media maelstrom. He's not in the Matrix. We are still dealing with the Matrix as citizens, and if we think there's something behind the maelstrom, we're foolish.
So is he the tail of the android meme or the tail of the AP, the anthropomorphic physical?
He's the tail of the AP, which is not in the media, and it's neither behind or in front. He's just not there. And as long as you ignore that, you're not there, because you're in the unreality, which is the old Oz, which isn't there anymore.
Well, I wonder if we got any calls, because, Bob, that's a big mouthful.
What is?
And I'd like to hear the anthropomorphic physical. What exactly were you talking about
there? The bag of chemicals. The bag of chemicals, Bob?
The AT, the anthropomorphic physical, is what we think we are. Every culture has a different interpretation, a different map. The 19th century saw that we were a bag of chemicals. The Eastern cultures see that we're chi and meditation and meridians. The thing they're trying to describe is the thing that feels human and not part of the rest of its environment.
Well, we're also going on an incredible tangent here in terms of we're on our way to Pluto and there's no turning back. Let's bring things down a little bit for
No,
another.
No, let's bring them up.
Bob wants to skew up tonight.
Well, up is down.
Are you not going to do some...
Wow.
Well, we're going to be doing some top down soon, because Skolnick's going to be coming back on.
And you'll do the top up. Well, let's do some bottom down.
Well, we can do that too.
Remember, we're inside each other. There is no direction. It's subatomic.
Yeah, we're all little microns.
Okay, gentlemen, how about I provide my final thought here?
I would love to hear your final thought.
Here it is, straight off the wire from Video Dave. Internet nut jobs have been petitioning a website to have Peter Jackson, the filmmaker who made Lord of the Rings, rename a second installment of Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, because they think The Two Towers, the name itself, is offensive in light of September 11th. They also claim that this title is clearly meant to refer to the attacks on the World Trade Center, even though Tolkien named the sequel half a century ago, for God's sake. Now also, the site has garnered over 6,500 names, and I am not allowed to provide the actual address. But our listeners could probably find out for themselves exactly where that resides.
That is ridiculous, and thank you for sharing that. This is a moment of our show, Cloak and Dagger, where we have Lenny and Bob talk about whatever the heck you want. Lenny.
Yeah, Bob, I wanted to do some top-down things, and I was looking at some of the things being reported this week by Robert Letterman, and our listeners can go to our website and listen to what he has and see what he has to say. We've got a link to him.
Okay, that's www.mojoradio.com, three W's, mojoradio.com, and click on the Cloak and Dagger icon.
Yeah, Bob, with 9/11 coming up, and... America getting geared up to recognize it. It's been reported by Robert Letterman. I'll just paraphrase some of his stuff here. He talks about the things that aren't going to be reported in the media. There'll be nothing about how Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, You there, Bob?
Yes.
Yeah, ordered the steel beams from the World Trade Center melted down before they could be examined by investigators. And it's interesting, he's focusing on Giuliani, and he says that HBO, of course, begins the Giuliani coronation on Sunday night, titled, quote, Medal and Honor, unquote, the latest 9/11 tribute, this time narrated by Sir Rudy Giuliani himself. He goes on to talk about Giuliani, and he talks about how Giuliani, quote, is tied to all of the worst in recent American history and works for the exact same bosses as G.W. Bush. His, quote, consulting company, unquote, Giuliani Partners, is a presidential administration in waiting. His first job as a consultant, helping Merrill Lynch wiggle out of a major criminal investigation. Just before I let you come into this, Bob, I just wanted to read you two more things that he says here, which are interesting predictions that we can follow. He says, perhaps what is actually planned is a mass die-off of our elected officials, a clean sweep that makes possible the total restructuring of the U.S. government. This is Letterman, of course, in quotes. He says that his prediction is that, at the very least, fake hero Giuliani will become Bush's running mate and the next U.S. vice president. Not long afterwards, Bush will be out of the picture, another Pretzel Act, and Giuliani will become President Fuhrer. So it's interesting that that this is a prediction he's making. You're down in the Manhattan area. Any comment?
Well, I have no problem with the prediction, but the scenario he's laying out is so tiny and puny. We got to realize that once we had the atomic bomb 50 years ago, you had to set up what was the solar government, a global intercom. There had to be total security, because even if there was going to be nuclear war, can you imagine all the coordination of the Air Force, the Navy, where the missiles are being targeted, and where the locations are going to be, and when, and whether it's going to backfire? The software, the computer software to organize that, was the most important national security issue in human history.
Mm-hmm.
And that was why the cancellation of the Constitution in 1947 with the National Security Act was so necessary. They had to police the whole world to protect us from being bombed. So it doesn't matter who's in the national government. This is more Android meme stuff, worrying about who the president is. When I talk about George Bush representing the anthropomorphic physical,
yeah,
it is not the image you see in the media. At best, you see that he refuses to talk to the media. That's because the anthropomorphic physical, which knocked out the towers last year, and why Hollywood has to bow down to the rule, Hollywood being part of the Android meme, has to bow down to the rule set by the image of the AP taking over, which is the September 11th disaster.
Yeah, but Bob, you're talking for people to understand what you're saying.
People understand me immediately. It just needs to be said. Now, to translate it into other activities in your life or others' lives is difficult.
Well,
I'm stating what everybody sees.
Well, I'm not sure if I understand. The AP is responsible for the Twin Towers. Could you explain that to me in really layman's terms?
So very simple. I've said before, the Android meme is the information society, or advertising is the bloodstream of that. We live in a post-information society. When you live in a virtual matrix that's so tiny, we live in a very tiny little spot, and we're all 6 billion of us are resonating in it. A human being who is outside of that and controls the software of protecting from us in the bombs can walk around like a giant. He's human-sized, but he's a giant. That's the AP. The media is so tiny. And so the AP is a human being, and it's confronting another human being. The Android meme says this is Bin Laden versus Bush. But the point is, a human being like myself can walk around the whole planet once I'm in control of the software that triggers the disasters.
Yep, you still have individuals who you can't just let off the hook because of a collective electric effect.
No, yes, you can, because the point is, we can't find out who that one person is. Now, Levin points out that Giuliani's father was a runner for the mafia. People don't understand the phrase organized crime. In the 30s, the world government set up crime as managers of the obsolete cities. They organized crime. Look at the phrase. They organized crime to be the managers. New York City is one of the first originally organized crime concentration camps. And everybody goes around saying, oh, my God, the mafia is linked in with the presidency. Get over it. That was necessary for the hardware because we didn't live in that hardware world. We lived inside the TV, then the computer, the satellite thing. Now, how can you demand responsibility from anybody?
Yeah, how can you?
You can't unless you say one thing. Turn it off. Now, how could you organize to turn it off? Pretty impossible. So let's admit that we're all equal and we're all guilty. And then there's nothing more to say about it except to be quite humble and be humiliated by the situation.
Agent 11, please read your question.
Marissa in Parkdale, she wants to know, what is top-down versus bottom-up? And I have a question for Lenny. Are you a top or a bottom?
All right, Lenny. Top-down, bottom-up.
I'm both. I'm top-down and bottom-up simultaneously.
Well, we all are top-down, bottom-up, but in this dialogue, Lenny is mainly designed and pre-programmed to do the top-down, as he did with the Robert Letterman information, and I'm supposed to provide the pattern of the bottom-up. But top-down is the human bureaucratic hierarchical necessity. Just like you get a lot of information thrown at you every day, you have to filter it. Just in your relationship with people, you have to filter and focus on certain things. The mind can't see it all. So you can create a little rigid control, so we'll call that top-down. But meanwhile, the environment that's inflicting on you is altering you unconsciously. That's the bottom-up. So when we invented the atomic bomb, the bottom-up effect was that information was the new war and hardware wars were obsolete. That affected every industrial nation and primitive and post-industrial around the world in the 40s and 50s. That was the bottom-up effect. What was the top-down?
Yeah.
And I was part of that. The solar government was organized and went around to every country and said, if you drop any kind of nuclear terrorism act on us, we will wipe your whole country out. So we brought in a top-down ultimatum. And this is what was happening by the time 1950. We said, you mess with us, we will nuke you. And that was a necessary hierarchical statement and condition because we were all numb before the bottom-up, which was the effect of the bomb. Then what happened? We invented television, which moved us into another dimension and altered our central nervous systems, made us be inside of everybody, and technology came alive via television, therefore we called the Android meme. And in that situation, everybody started hallucinating, and drug taking took over. There was a civilian and international and solar problem that bypassed the security problems of atomic warfare. Atomic warfare continued. Promise software was invented by INSLA in the 70s and stolen by the government because they needed to use those codes to monitor the whole old top-down the industrial structure of the bomb. Meanwhile, everybody's taking cocaine, drugs, and discoing away into a whole other effect that led to AIDS. This is the confusion of top-down and bottom-up that we have to deal with as citizens. And let's not listen to anybody on any medium that tells you otherwise because it's irrelevant. And even if they're talking in English, they're canceled out. We don't live in an English environment.
What environment do we live in?
We live in an environment where we are inside each and every one of us. The digital reality is that we are resonating on a little pinhead, every one of us. Think about the medieval question, how many angels dance with the head of a pin? We now know the answer, 6 billion. And they're the UFOs. UFOs have whatever they are. The point is we are all inside, and there's no linguistic, imagistic movie or TV series that can tell you and show you that.
Okay, Bob, I want to get Sherman in here now.
This is great, though. This is, I think I'm getting it. I'm starting to understand.
Top down, Bob.
Okay, we got some top down from Sherman. Hello, Sherman Skolnick. Thank you for joining us on Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, I'm pleased and honored to be back on your program. Here are a couple of items ahead of the mass media. The other day, they planted a story with a new cable show by Phil Donahue. He suddenly began discussing political assassination. Now, he says, if the United States invades Iraq and seeks to murder Saddam Hussein, that would cause George W. Bush himself to be put in the crosshairs. And he used the word political assassination. Now, what's happening, which they're not going into, is the White House, we believe, is planning a mock attack against Bush himself. In other words, alleged physical harm against Bush, which it only is a fakery, a mock attack.
A mock attack?
The purpose is so that the Bush White House can proceed with their Iraq invasion plans by silencing dissidents in North America. In other words, anyone that speaks up, the secret police will come and arrest them following this supposed mock attack to harm the occupant and resident of the White House. That just shows you how desperate they are, that they would go to that extent that they have a scheme along those lines.
Well, I understand that Giuliani had the FDNY union leaders, Fire Department of New York, arrested in their homes for leading protests against his turning the recovery of bodies into a scoop.
Right.
Dump operation, correct?
Right.
So, I mean, this is happening, and people don't read about it, though. They're not...
All right, now here's the second piece of news ahead of the parade. The New York Times ran a story that they attribute to military sources who they do not identify.
Right.
They claimed during the Iran-Iraq War, which went on from 1980 to 1988,
right,
that our top officials supplied secretly battle plans to Saddam Hussein so that he could attack, could fight back Iran and use poison gas against them.
Ooh.
And who did they blame this on, the New York Times?
Who?
General Colin Powell, who was the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Right, George Herbert Walker Bush, who at the time was the vice president.
Yeah.
George Shultz, who was the Secretary of State. And Richard Armitage, who was more or less a stooge for Colin
another
Powell.
Another.
But listen what they left out of the New York Times story,
yep,
which we in the past have talked about, but it didn't get into the mass media.
Right.
Now, who was it that reportedly supplied the ingredients to Saddam Hussein to manufacture poison gas to use against his own dissidents, the Kurds, and against the young wave after wave of Iranian young people used in their fight? They used children as young as 14 as soldiers, Iran, and they were more or less mowed down by poison gas used by Saddam Hussein. Now, where did they get the ingredients, reportedly, to manufacture poison gas?
From here.
They got it from a unit of a French company called American Lafarge. Why do I bring it up? Because several years ago, one magazine published a devastating story, American Spectator, about American Lafarge, the American unit of a French company that supplied the ingredients for poison gas manufacturing to Saddam Hussein. Guess who is or was a major stockholder of American Lafarge? Daddy Bush.
No.
George Herbert Walker Bush.
Oh,
wait a minute, that isn't all.
I'm not surprised.
Thank you, Sherman. Please continue with what you were saying.
Before the break, I was talking about the American unit of a French company, American Lafarge, and what is little known about them is that they reportedly supplied to Saddam Hussein the ingredients for the making of poison gas that was used against Saddam's own dissidents, the Kurds, and was used to mow down the young troops of the Iranians during the Iranian-Iraq War from 1980 to 88. Who was apparently a major stockholder of American Lafarge? George Herbert Walker Bush. You got that?
Yeah.
But wait a minute.
Yeah.
Who at the time was a director of American Lafarge? Hillary Rodham Clinton. Now, you see, that, of course, runs in contradiction to the idea that the mass media gives that Bill and Hillary Clinton were on the outs with the Bush family, which they were not.
Well, Sherman, I have a question. How does this relate to Jay Stevens and Systematics and Hillary Clinton representing Jay Stevens? Does that overlap there?
Yes, of course. Stevens and Company is the largest bond house outside of Wall Street that has reportedly been involved in laundering funds with the help of Webster Hubbell, the late Vince Foster, who died supposedly as a suicide, although some people believe it was murder, and with Hillary Clinton. Now, the other thing is, why is the younger Bush, who's the occupant and resident of the White House, we don't call him the president, not the way he got into the White House, why is he so anxious to do something in opposition to what some of the military, here oppose, a land invasion of Iraq? Now, what is the problem? As we have long since pointed out, Daddy Bush in the 80s was a business partner with Saddam Hussein, and the Persian Gulf War in its simplest form was a falling out of business partners.
Yeah.
We go into the details in a little known lawsuit where we were the only journalists covering it. It's on our website under a story called The Secrets of Timothy McVeigh. Our website is www.skolniksreport.com. S-K-O-L-N-I-C-K-S, skolniksreport.com.
And listeners can get it also through mojoradio.com.
Yeah, but here's the point. So 11 years later, Bush Jr. Has a falling out with his business partner, Osama bin Laden. And so he wants to demonize him. See, in other words, they want to point to a single devil. He says, "Now we got to get to it." Now, why do they have to go at Saddam Hussein?
Yeah.
First of all, in the 70s, just after the elder Bush was the head of the secret police, the CIA, is when Saddam Hussein was installed in Baghdad by murdering his predecessor. Who arranged that? Daddy Bush.
Right.
You see? So you see, censorship is not supplying known items at a time and place when it's important. Now, Sherman, are they in advance of the American election for Congress this November, if there is an election, by the way, we're in some doubt, the GOP, the Republicans in America, are worried from a survey they made that there'll be a Democrat Party sweep. And, of course, the Democrat Party, if they find some flaw with Bush Jr., they put him up for impeachment.
He's got to get everything done before that election.
Yeah.
Now, Sherman, let me ask, you brought up Hillary Clinton. Now, you were at a court hearing where she was named by a terrorist group in Chicago, took over your friend's factory, and then Hillary went on Oprah and singled you out as a terrorist. That's 10 years ago.
That's true. She put us on an enemies list, and we couldn't get anywhere in court because her lawyer blackmailed the judge. Her lawyer, by the way, is David Kendall, who was the lawyer and strategist for the supermarket tabloid papers that were going to print a picture of Bush Jr. Dancing naked, reportedly, on the top of a table in a bar.
Amazing.
Guess what happened to that picture editor?
What happened?
The first one to die from anthrax. Bob Stevens.
Anthrax.
American Media Incorporated.
Yeah, and they made the money off the antidote Cyprio, and they once again
they began taking the supposed antibiotic useful against anthrax September 11th or even the day before. Hey, what did those guys know that they started using Cipro in the White House before it became known in the press that there was a problem with anthrax?
Well, what you do is you have somebody invest in the company that has the antidote, and then as president, order Fort Detrick to release the anthrax.
Right. The Carlyle Group is reportedly among the secret owners of Bioport Corporation, Lansing, Michigan, that until recently had the exclusive contract with the Pentagon to make anthrax vaccine. Hey, that's a neat business trick. You caused the problem, and you got the vaccine to deal with the problem.
Yeah, that's right.
Citizens and the employees at the end at the Bioport factory were told right after September 11th they couldn't speak to the media.
Right. The Bush White House ordered the National Guard to surround the plant so that they wouldn't talk to the media and tell us who the true owners are of this private plant. We found out anyway, and we did a story called "The Anthrax Commissars." But the other thing is, you see, the other problem, why they need a commotion, that is a mock alleged assassination attempt on George W. Bush, so that they can do something to dissidents in North America is because one of the major financial enterprises of this part of the world, J.P. Morgan Chase, which is a merger between Morgan and the Chase Manhattan Bank Holding Company, the Rockefellers, hey, they're going to the wall. They have bet the wrong way on gold.
Yes.
Hey, get this, $23 trillion in derivatives on the wrong end of the gold market. So if gold goes up, J.P. Morgan Chase goes down. That's how simple it is. And so to try to offset that, they need a land invasion of Iraq right now. I mean, in other words, they've got to continue to demonize Daddy Bush's former private business.
Well, this is a good point you've brought up, and we have an email that just arrived that sounds something like that. Agent Levin, would you please read this for Mr. Skolnick?
Mr. Skolnick, after the 9-1-1 tragedy, many people of Middle Eastern descent were questioned, and many put in jail. Is there an update on that situation?
Well, of course, you saw what happened. First of all, an Irish documentary maker came out with a documentary that, in violation of the Geneva Convention, the American CIA and others in Afghanistan murdered 3,000 Afghan prisoners of war by drowning them or otherwise killing them in a former fortress town called Marif Sharif or something. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but they documented. I mean, that's a violation of the Geneva Convention, which the United States signed it. I mean,
well, Sherman, they had people here rounded up and questioned, and someone in particular got smeared that we talked about earlier in the show. So I guess what our person writing in was wondering is, are there still a lot of people of Middle Eastern descent in jail, with their liberties being taken away?
Well, I'll put it a different way. At the end of the Persian Gulf War, Daddy Bush brought into the United States 4,000 top Iraqi military intelligence officers and their families, and 2,000 of them lived in Oklahoma City. Okay, you got that?
And
you know, there's quietly a lawsuit pending in the District of Columbia where those that lost family members in the Oklahoma City bombings, I call it bombings in the plural, and they want to blame Iraq for that. So you see, there's all these different things happening at the same time. In other words, if the Democrats, if there is an election, and remember, I'm the one that was heckled for quite a while prior to the year 2000 presidential election in the United States. I went on a lot of talk shows and said we may not have a presidential election in the usual way. And some people said, what are you talking about? What are you talking about, Skolnick? Did we have an election in the usual way in the year 2000?
No.
Of course not. A gang of five on the high court installed, I call them Bush fraud. I mean, I'm an independent. If that upsets some people in the United States that voted for this character, I mean, he wasn't elected. He was installed.
Okay, Sherman, you think about this as you wait to talk to us again. You think about how the cell phone caused all this chaos in the 90s. Think about that, Sherman, as you sit home.
All right, well, we're going to pick up on that maybe the next time we have people together.
I hope there isn't this mock attack, but you see,
there will be a mock attack. You're guaranteed of that, Sherman.
Well, I mean a mock assassination attack.
That's what's going to happen.
Now, if the Secret Service is listening, I am not urging harm to anybody. I'm simply pointing out that they already planted part of the story with a cable TV show on the network, the Phil Donahue Show, where and one of the websites, Lens.com, is got a transcript of the discussion that went on that TV show where they brought up the thing that if any harm comes to Saddam, that harm will supposedly come to George W. Bush. But I'm saying we uncovered what appears to be a scheme for a mock assassination plot against White House resident Bush for the purpose of causing a scare so that they can silence dissidents, that is, by the secret police. And I know that there are some people, maybe even where you are in Canada, Well, I think because of your efforts in Canada, they do know that there's a secret police in Canada and there's a secret police in the United States.
Yes.
I think, Lenny, because of your great efforts, your listeners know some of these things, whereas some others probably do not know.
Yes.
Chairman, we're hoping Mr. Bush is listening. We're trying to help him, trying to warn him.
And we're going
to
try and get him on next week's guest show.
I like how you call him the White House resident and not the president.
Well, I'm a little blunt. On my TV show here, which is a non-commercial show, I call him Bush Fraud.
All right. Well, thank you so much,
Sherman. Notice how it runs in his family. Daddy Bush was in private business with Saddam, and then they had a falling out, which became the Persian Gulf War. 11 years later, Bush Jr., he has a falling out with his business partner, Osama bin Laden, and so he wants to run after him. I mean, maybe I shouldn't laugh about it because it's tragic, but there seems something stupid by the way these big shots run the government in North America. I mean,
they're reacting, Sherman, to the use of cell phones. You walk down the street, everybody's on their cell phone. They got no time to pay attention to the government. The government feels lonely, trying to get attention.
The other thing is they're trying to offset what they knew even last year before Black Tuesday, that we're facing a market crash, perhaps.
That happened a long time ago, Sherman.
But they want to offset it with all... Hey, by the way, the book written by those two French writers has been translated into English and is now going to be available in North America and is going to cause a big commotion, because they talk about the fact that Bush Jr. had prior knowledge that he announced in June.
We got to go, Sherman. But look, let's wrap it up. But we can't wait to get you back.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you.
I hope there is no mock attack and so on, but I think it's important that the people know what the scheme is.
Sleeper, thank you for checking in with us. How are things in cyberspace?
Excellent. It's been a little busier than normal.
Getting a lot of hits?
Yes, I have a few things to report.
Are they trying
one,
to hit your website again? Or are they trying to virus it?
No, the live feed they were after tonight. It was overloaded a bit a few times. I have to do a little more digging to find out if that's exactly what happened, but... The live feed, you know, was too many people, I guess, trying to check it out. Now
that could be because of Agent 11 here.
For everybody at home, they'll be able to listen on the internet.
They're not at home. They're inside us.
Oh, they're inside us. Sorry, Bob. Sorry about that. But Sleeper, how are things out in cyberspace and the modeming and the what's happening?
Well, one of the things that happened when I hang out in the chat groups and that as the show is going live, Agent 11 came perilously close to revealing one of her tattoos that might give away her identity, and I wanted to warn her because she was getting very close to the camera and sort of taking her clothes or like kind of...
Yes, being very seductive for
seductive
people who
for
are
the camera,
on the internet, yes.
And she was so close to blowing it, and we had a couple people who know her real name and were a little scared.
That's great. I'm glad for the warning that we have to make sure that Agent 11 doesn't let any of her tattoos reveal.
For the normal audience, though, that was a hit. that show was a big hit. On another private chat line, I have to slightly apologize to Bob because I wasn't able to track this guy. I was really bold in trying to figure out who he was, and he kind of caught on and took off. But he made a good observation. He was curious, and that's why I kind of knew he might be a somebody. He asked if Top Up, if this show was the first time the term Top Up had been used.
Yes, it is.
It is. Okay, so he's been following you. He seemed to know a lot about you, and... asked that question the second he heard that. So there's the first on the show for the people who follow the AP and the AM.
It was used because we were asked about it.
So, Sleeper, you're going to get next week. So we got Mike Rupert coming in next week, 9/11, and you're going to get that stuff up by Tuesday for everybody who's out there.
I got
or inside us
some calls from people I don't as often get calls from. The site is definitely being taken to a new level. The sort of the green light's been given. And that's going to be a fun project for me to get all my guys together. And,
well, you know, our producer.
It's a great spot for amateur spies.
That's right. Yeah. And they're concerned. They want to make it available to everybody. It's not going to be.
Sleeper, our producer called Nelson in this Thursday and said they had a lot of hits last week. Of course, their computer, they can see how many live hits we get.
Well, I see that. I see that data, too.
Yeah.
And it's.
Something like 50,000 hits.
Yeah, no, it's growing. Yeah,
that's
no,
terrific. Listen, do we have a final thought from anyone? We've only got a minute left of the show.
Yeah, Bob, Rudy Giuliani is the real thing. You're down there in the New York State area. I like what Letterman says. Watch him ride the 9/11 bandwagon this week coming up right into the White House and the creation of a real police state. What do you think, Bob?
I'm not concerned at all. With the zapper that's activating the Earth's grid, it's going to make September 11th look real puny. We've got more problems when people start feeling their bodies fall apart. They will feel it happening. The zapper that's coming through the satellites is a whole new level, and any of the things we've talked about are going to be irrelevant. So don't worry about Giuliani. The White House is not relevant, not involved, and just running around collecting their drug accords.
Right. It's only the media and the networks that are hoiking it up as a big distraction.
They're not even being paid attention to, too. Everybody's on their cell phone. Mm-hmm. You walk down the street, everybody's on the phone. Everybody talking the phone 20 years ago that much? No.
Well, they're all on the cell phone, and what is that doing? It's going to really have a big effect on the White House.
Well, no, a big effect on all of us. It's going to show how united we are. We're going to have to learn to live within this ESP, which has been cloned. That is the identity crisis that even Bin Laden and Bush aren't aware of.
All right. Well, this has been one heck of a
last
show.
Last word goes to you, Bob.
Well, the last word will go after I thank everyone. Let me thank Carla over there.
Right.
Carla, and your new guy, the stud puppet. What's his name? Zala. I see their mouth moving. I don't know what that means. Todd? Is that Todd? Tom? Okay, well, he wants to change his name. He's afraid of this show. This is the first time he's been in the studio. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. Thanks to Nick. Thanks to our special guests, of course, William Thomas and Donald W. Scott and, of course, Skolnick, Sleeper, Video Dave, Agent 11. Can't wait to get out of here. All right. This has been a great show, and please check on our website, mojoradio.com. Go over to Cloak & Dagger. Click on the icon on the right side of your screen. Stay with us. And, Bob, the final word.
Mao Zedong.